on a Tuesday drive. It is WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where UConn became the first repeat champion in college basketball in 17 years last night. The Huskies also have won 6 titles in the last quarter century, which is crazy to me. But here's the luxury of sports talk. We have the luxury of being able to push the conversation forward on sports shows like this one. We have the ability to look ahead. You should be prepared for this because it's already happening. The Duke hype is going to get crazy this offseason. And heading into next year, you should expect the Blue Devils to be heavy favorites to win the national championship. But Josh, what about UConn? They just killed everybody the last 2 years. UConn's about to have a massive overhaul. There won't be a returning most outstanding player in the Final Four like UConn had this year with Tristan Newton, the former ECU Pirate, or Alex Caraban returning. UConn is likely to lose all of its starters. Newton, Spencer, Diarra, they're seniors. Klingon, going to be a draft pick. So is Stephon Castle. You might even lose Caraban, who should get drafted as well somewhere. It's not a great draft. Also, there hasn't been a three-peat champion in college basketball since the tournament expanded to 64 in 1985. UCLA winning 7 in a row, the last time we've seen a team win 3 straight titles, so they're not going to be preseason number one. Duke will be that, and we're already starting to see the roster construction. Mark Mitchell has entered the transfer portal. We learned that today. This is probably something to do with playing time, given the types of players that are coming in and how congested that front court is going to be, and the fact he's not ready to be an NBA player currently. Duke made the Elite Eight this year, and they are going to add 2 top 5 NBA draft picks, including the most touted high school player since Zion. That, of course, is Cooper Flagg. But don't forget about the 7-footer, Kamon Melowak, who Brendan Marks was on the show yesterday from The Athletic. And when you are at the Final Four, events like that, everybody's together within the sport. And he was telling us amidst the whispers that people, what's being discussed about the future of the sport and stuff that he hears from NBA folks, this is going to be a buzzworthy team in NBA circles, certainly in scouting circles, college circles. Here was Brendan Marks yesterday saying something that should raise some eyebrows.
Listen, Melowak too. Like, I know people are much more familiar with Cooper Flagg, but Melowak, the 7'2 Sudanese center, I think I have said this a couple of times, maybe on here, but an NBA scout texted me after he committed saying, Duke next year with those two guys, that they're going to be the most heavily scouted college duo since Embiid and Wiggins in 2014 at Kansas, more than RJ and Zion. That is the level of attention that these guys are going to be getting next year.
An Elite Eight team adding 2 top 5 NBA draft picks, including the best prospect we've seen since Zion, maybe even further than that, according to what Brendan is saying there. Yes, that team is going to be the favorites. Let's just hope, for our purposes, for entertainment purposes, Duke and UConn figure out a way to schedule a non-conference meeting at Madison Square Garden. That would be a lot of fun for next year. It's already starting. Go to a betting site now that betting's legal in the state of North Carolina. Duke is your betting favorite everywhere.
Send me that cash out,
fam. To win the national championship. It's going to be labeled Final Four or bust because Duke's not getting credit for getting to the Elite Eight this year. Oh, you only got there because JMU upset Wisconsin and Shed went down when you faced number 1 Houston, so they were compromised, and you lost to 11th-seeded NC State. Certainly, you guys can be better with Cooper Flagg, right? What's better than an Elite Eight? Getting to the Final Four. It's not fair, but that's how this is going to be framed. North Carolina could be a preseason top five team with Harrison Ingram back, Elliott Cadeau back, Ian Jackson added to the mix. They should be a preseason top 10 team. Preseason top five, I don't think, is out of the question. NC State should be ranked. Made it to the Final Four, and you're going to bring back, likely, Diarra, Middlebrooks, Jaden Taylor, Mike O'Connell. A lot of familiarity there. So somewhere you probably put them in there. But Duke is going to be the heavy favorite going into next year. Prepare yourself for that. The hype train is just getting started. 336-777-1600 if you want in on the show. Will Dalton, the executive producer of this show. Given the fact that the Orioles are on again during the show and we've got the Mark Mitchell transfer news, there's only one perfect guest we could bring into the studio today. Who is that? Need I say more?
Who needs championships when you can look at birds?
Connor O'Neill going to be in studio with us next hour. If you don't know what that sound means, WD, tell the people what movie you watched earlier today because you were a procrastinator.
I watched Teen Wolf.
You'll review that later this hour. 336-777-1600. If you want in, we're streaming video on YouTube, Twitch, and X, however, and wherever you are watching or listening today's show, we appreciate that. Let's go to Ed in Winston-Salem, who wants in. It is kind of crazy. UNC and UConn now have the same number of titles with six, except UConn's done it in the last quarter century. Ed, you're a Tar Heel fan. What to make of that?
Well, I totally agree. Yeah, that is outstanding. But one thing, and I looked it up, and I could not believe this. You would think UConn would be in the top 10 in total victories.
No.
They're not. They rank number 23.
Yeah, here's another stat for you. I want to make sure that I get the exact statistics right, but in the tournaments that they participate in, they just go so far and win national championships most times or not. Here's the stat from ESPN Stats and Info. UConn is about to win its fifth national championship, or they did just win their fifth national championship since the last time a Big Ten team won a title. They have, oh, here it is. They have missed the tournament 32% of the year since their first title in 1999. They've won 24% of the tournaments they've played in since 99. So there are so many years they've just flat out missed the tourney about a third of the time. But they, when they make the tournament, they win it about a quarter of the time. Kind of nuts. But.
Yeah, that is an impressive. I've seen on Cats Illustrated that supposedly Hurley has removed his name, and also Nate Oates from Alabama, from the Kentucky job.
Yeah, we have some sound on that we need to get to a little bit later on because that was the last question he was presented with. I appreciate the call. Ed, there's a lot for us to hit on in relation to the national championship game last night. Even though UConn remained the champs, they actually weren't my biggest takeaway. My biggest takeaway, with Purdue's loss, two lengthy droughts were extended. One I just mentioned, the Big Ten is still titleless since the year 2000. That's not just for the men's game, that's for the women's team as well, women's game as well. During that same period, the ACC has won 8 national championships. The Big East has 9, with 5 of them belonging to UConn. Of course, the year before, Michigan State won in 2000. UConn won its first title, 1999. You can't be viewed as the top conference in college basketball, or even one of the best, if you never win it. So that's one of the lengthy streaks. Another one that's meaningful to people around here, or at least should be, the state of Indiana still has not won a national championship since 1987.
Hoop State.
That was Bob Knight's Hoosiers team that won in 87. Since then, Indiana as a state has struck out 4 times in national championships. Indiana losing to Gary Williams in Maryland, 2002. 2010, Butler, Brad Stevens losing to Duke. 2011, the next year, losing to the UConn Huskies, and then, of course, UConn taking down Purdue last night. The state of North Carolina, meanwhile, has 9 national championships. The state of North Carolina has won nine times since Indiana's most recent win. Five of them by Duke, four by North Carolina. Ah, but it's just those teams that win anything. Well, NC State made the Final Four this year. Our state's the real hoop state. Yeah, people saying, well, a high school basketball scene, cool. Pick something that we can't watch on television. That you want to claim that? Oh, yeah, we're better at high school basketball. That's debatable, too. The number of NBA players is certainly comparable. I don't know if you want to go that path. Oh, our high school gyms are bigger than yours. They look like college gyms. Well, then how do your college teams do? Oh, they never win anything anymore? I'm sorry. You're not the hoop state if you don't win anything on a national basis. Your high school teams, guess who they play? Other high school teams in Indiana. What happens when they play non-Indiana teams? They probably lose, just like all their college teams do.
Shout out to
Jordan. Their pro teams do.
Shout out to Jordan Cernkamp.
Terrible. Nah, shout out to all the Indiana people in my mentions. Get out of here with this. You love basketball. That's fine. You have a great passion for basketball. You've got great buildings, but you don't have better teams than we do. We are the one and true hoop state. This is another conversation that's come out of last night. UConn is being billed as one of the best teams ever. So that had me thinking. Who are the greatest teams since the tournament expanded to 64? 40 years of college basketball teams that we've watched. Who is the greatest championship team ever? I have a top five list that I've put together. And I'll share that list with you next.
Introducing the world's greatest entertainer, the hardest working man in show business. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show.
Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
One one in the third. Orioles Red Sox opening day for Boston, the latest team has had their opening day this baseball season. But we're going to remain focused.
Boston,
the show we have at hand here. Last night, UConn completed its back-to-back. Defended its title successfully. First repeat champion since 2007, which had many saying they are one of the greatest teams we've ever seen in the modern era of college basketball. How do we define the modern era? Well, a good starting place is when the tournament expanded to 64 teams in 1985. That's 40 years of college basketball champions rolling through. That had me thinking. Late last night, after getting back from BJ's Brewhouse, something that we'll get to in just a bit, the five best national championship winning teams in the last 40 years. I put together a list. Let's start with the honorable mentions. 1990 UNLV. They lost more games than I thought. And you just don't remember that because they're most remembered for blowing out Duke the way they did in 1990. Grandmama, tons of great players, Greg Anthony. 90 UNLV, an honorable mention. 2007 Florida. They were the last repeat champ after all. Billy Donovan's team with Al Horford and Joakim Noah and Brewer. 2018 Villanova. Two titles in 3 years. They smacked everyone on their way to winning a national championship, beating Michigan and Mo Wagner in that championship game. Those are my three honorable mentions. Now getting to the teams that made the list, we'll go five through one.
Number five.
2012 Kentucky. All freshmen and sophomores. All underclassmen playing on that team. AD, the number one pick, of course. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist to the Hornets with the number two pick. That team went 38-2 to the Final Four, where it beat Kansas in the national championship game.
Number four.
1992 Duke. A repeat champion like UConn. Legends all over the place. Christian Laettner. Bobby Hurley. Grant Hill. You can roll through the entire lineup if you want to. But they weren't as dominant as you might remember them being when you dive into the actual results. Certainly not in the tournament. Most notably, they needed a miracle to get past Kentucky and Rick Pitino in 92 with Laettner hitting the shot. Grant Hill the pass. Maybe the greatest college basketball game in the modern history of the sport. 1992 Duke, number four on the list.
Number three.
2024 UConn. It's hard to really compare teams today to even teams 15, 20 years ago. Pre-one and done, pre-transfer portal. It's watered down the game a bit, but UConn checks all the boxes. If there ever is a team to put up against some of the other ones we're talking about, it's a repeat champ, 37-3, average margin of victory of 22 points per win in the tournament. A year after, that margin was 18 points per win. They look like one of the best teams we've ever seen. They got the bona fides of one of the best teams we've ever seen, and they beat a legitimate one seed in the championship game convincingly in order to do so. UConn, one of the three greatest teams, greatest national champs of the last 40 years.
Number two.
2001 Duke. This was Coach K's best team. Not the Laettner teams, this team here. Battier, Boozer, Jay Williams, and they absolutely blasted people. This was a rocket ship that Coach K had in 2001, beating Arizona in the championship game. Coach K's best team, number two on the greatest national champions list.
Number one.
The 2009 North Carolina Tar Heels.
Thank God.
A Final Four team that brought everybody back, and then rolled through everybody, massacred teams, including in Detroit, Tom Izzo, Draymond Green, and Michigan State. That lineup, 1 through 6 or 7, just stupid talent all over the place. They play good teams. It's the best team that I've ever seen. So the 2009 Tar Heels, number one on the list. And when you go through the list, WD, all blue bloods. I consider UConn to be one.
For sure.
2012 Kentucky 5, 92 Duke 4, 2024 UConn 3, 2001 Duke 2, 2009 North Carolina number one on the list. 336-777-1600 is the number. You said thank God there at number one. I didn't now realize, because again, I don't view this through the lens of fans. If I did five national championship teams and three honorable mentions and didn't get to any of the four Tar Heel national title teams, I venture to say some people would be upset and call me a hater. Rightfully so.
I would say, well, forget the other Tar Heel teams. I just, 09 was the only one that I was like, right. Where are
I
they?
I would say, see, 2017 North Carolina almost made it as an honorable mention, but they weren't so great in the Final Four. Kennedy Meeks kind of rescued him in a drunk, dumb fist fight type of a game. I felt the 2016 team was a lot better than the 2017 team that had Bryce Johnson and Marcus Paige on it. I didn't see 2009 was stronger than 2008. I felt 2016 that lost to Chris Jenkins was better than 2017. So that's why North Carolina didn't appear even in the honorable mentions, that 2017 team. So there you have it. What do you make of the list? 336-777-1600 is the phone number. The Orioles got a couple runners in scoring position here. It did make me feel good at BJ's Brewhouse last night where we had some listeners say, you know what I like? I like it when the Orioles are on. And you'll say, oh, they just got a home run. They just got a double. And I always am insecure about that because I venture to say most people do not give a rip at all.
Oh, it's pure entertainment.
Because it's a show within a show.
It is. That's why I like it.
We got it on the big screen here, and Colton Cowser's got runners on second and third.
Who needs championships when you can look at Burns?
That is enough reason to feel entertained. Are you not entertained by the Orioles coming up? It was great to see some listeners last night. 9:20, late tip. 2-2 pitch, deposited into left center. Oh, that's going to score one. That's going to score two. And Colton Cowser's safe at second. That's two doubles for him, baby. Oh, the Birds. Oh, let's spoil the Red Sox opening day. We're aligned on this. You hate the Red Sox more than you like seeing me watch the Orioles lose,
yeah,
right?
I'm on your side today.
Love it. Let's go to Jew in Winston-Salem. So, Jew, 2012 Kentucky 5, 92 Duke 4, 24 UConn 3, 2001 Duke 2, 2009 Carolina number 1. Do you have any issues with my list?
No, I don't. You saved yourself there putting 09 Carolina number 1. Because you was going to have a whole bunch of heated calls coming in.
I was concerned, Jew.
See,
I really was.
I do get accused. This is what happens when you do an opinion sports show. People say, oh, you're just trying to stir it up and get people mad. Like, this should be evidence that I'm not doing that. This is honest opinion that I have here. Because the easiest thing to do if I were interested in that is just exclude Carolina from this list and see what happens.
Well, that would have been too much on purpose, though. We would have known that. The only problem I say, I think the 05 Tar Heels probably deserve the honorable mention, too.
Yeah. See, I like the 05 team more than I like the 17 team. I think I'm with you on that. I like them more than the 93 team, too, obviously. So that is an interesting suggestion. Thank you, Jew, for the call. It does feel like a lot of people forget about 05. Marvin Williams is coming off the bench on that team. Come on now.
Rashad McCants.
Thank you again to our friends at BJ's. WD, you got to try a Pizookie.
I did.
We ate it like a couple. I guess we are a couple. Are my radio wife.
That's right.
I need to get I married into this WD-styled t-shirt. I got my Virginia. Do you even get why I'm wearing this shirt today?
Well, because Sarah Bradford went to Virginia. Why you're wearing it today, you mean? What's the occasion?
A lot of Virginia fans are happy today. They didn't want somebody else to lose to a 16 seed and then win the title the next year.
Oh.
So Purdue did not do that last night.
I got you.
That's why I'm wearing this shirt today. How would you describe a Pizookie to people who have not tried one?
It's, for starters, it's tasty. Let's just start there.
Well, what is it?
It's like it's a big cookie, and it's warm, and it's in a tin, and then they put ice cream on top.
A tin? It's a cast iron skillet.
Whatever.
That's what makes it warm. A tin, what you say.
But it was, and like the cookie's really like goo. We got a brownie. I wanted cookies and cream, and then you're like, hey, can we get brownie?
Well, they put the
I don't care.
Shout out to Virginia, who is lovely waitress / bartender.
Yes.
Put some cookies and cream mousse on top.
Oh, that's what that was.
A game changer as well.
It was. I had salmon too. It was
really
good.
It was great to hang out with listeners and Hunter Salas.
Yeah.
That was our group.
Because
we build that. There might be some surprises.
Yeah.
If you were there, there were surprises. Hunter Salas showing up from Wake Forest.
Is that Hunter Salas over there?
Jay Austin trying to restrain himself.
I know.
I got to ask if he's going to come back.
Felt for him.
Got to make that happen.
Yeah.
But no, thanks to all the folks at BJ's Brewhouse. That was certainly a lot of fun watching the national championship. Last night in UConn, cutting down nets.
Instead of just talking, why don't you listen? That's why you have people call in. Listen for a minute.
Oh, welcome back to the Happy Circle.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody be serving. Like California, you'd see them wearing their baggies, Warachi sandals too.
Very memorable from the Team Wolf soundtrack. 1985's Team Wolf, starring Michael J. Fox, WD's movie this week, in honor of NC State making the Final Four. Do the Beach Boys have any resonance to people under 30? Any resonance? When you think of the Beach Boys, what do you think of?
When they made some appearances on Full House.
Yeah.
With John Stamos.
That's good.
Yeah. But other than that.
That qualifies. Keeps. Yeah, that show certainly exposed the Beach Boys to a younger generation. A good answer there. Let's get into the movie. We'll pick out WD's movies for next week when Connor O'Neill joins us in studio in about a half hour. Team Wolf time at the movies.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars,
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
What you liked, what you didn't like, best quote, Rotten Tomatoes score. We'll see if WD can get it within five. Team Wolf, again, came out in 1985, not acknowledging all the stuff that came after that, the remakes, the show, all that.
So is that based off of the movie? Like, is that?
Sure.
Okay.
What did you like most about watching Team Wolf? And for perspective, WD said, I'm going to watch this going into the weekend. I might watch it over the weekend.
We just had to go there.
Last night, you are hanging out with us at BJ's Brewhouse, yes. So I know you're not watching Team Wolf. I walk into the office today and you're watching. Here's your presentation. You're watching it on your phone.
I still watched it just fine.
That's the way you took in Team Wolf for the first time.
Got what I needed to get.
What did you like about this movie?
Styles. Styles was fantastic. I love Styles.
It's interesting.
Just a nut he is.
I need to find the list. Maybe you can help me find this. The list of just the shirts that he was wearing.
Ugh.
The iconic t-shirts.
Some of which you can't say on air.
For sure. But I think I have, rewatching this movie, a similar takeaway as you. It's remembered as a Michael J. Fox movie, and this movie came out right after Back to the Future, so he is the big draw, the big star of it. Hall of Fame supporting characters. You've got Styles, Coach Finstock, you have Pamela throwing 100 miles per hour. There's just the drama teacher.
Oh, I loved him.
It's outstanding. It really is. I started to like Chubby as well.
Oh, yeah.
Chubby on the team. And Mick, the villain, has a very memorable, memeable face.
Yes.
A face that no way resembles a high schooler's face because he was probably 30.
That's right.
When playing the role. That's what they would do at the time. Just have late 20s, early 30s types playing high schoolers. Grease probably being the most egregious example of that in the late 70s. Hall of Fame supporting characters, for sure. What did you like the most about Styles, though?
Well, his scene where he tried to get liquor,
yeah,
and then got denied by the old man that was working behind the counter. And
having
then,
nothing to do with it.
And then him driving off was funny.
Surfing.
Him at the
parties that they throw.
The party scene, the first big
How
party scene.
How come 80s party scenes are just so insane? What? Where are the parents? Where are police in this movie? There's a werewolf.
That's probably a fair critique. Like, oh, just all the parents. And just
that might be a segue here.
Yeah.
What didn't you like about this movie?
The blonde girl was the worst.
No, I don't know about that.
I mean,
Pamela.
Listen,
it's kind of unrealistic that he goes back to Boof at the end.
She was very talented.
I'm just saying that I think maybe he's not giving Pamela the cold shoulder the way that he did. I'm just saying.
I don't know about that.
Michael J. Fox doesn't seem like the coolest guy to be around anyway.
No.
So I don't blame Pamela for not acknowledging him all that much until he turns into a werewolf. But her mind, mind has been hurt. She's broadened her horizons in being interested.
Yeah, but she got with him, and then when they're walking back to her place, he's like, so is this a, oh, no, I'm still with my boyfriend.
That's it.
We just, you know. Also, the dancing, terrible.
There's only one right answer to this, and you did not answer it correctly.
What is it?
All the basketball scenes.
Oh, the basketball montage at the end in the championship game, way too long.
All the basketball in this game is horrific. And it doesn't make sense. Like, one time, there was a foul 10 seconds into the game, and he's going to the free throw line. You're like, whoa, whoa, what type of bonus is this?
On the floor.
It's a catastrophe. Michael J. Fox doesn't know how to play basketball. It's obvious.
Yep.
It's terrible. It's hard to watch. Then you let Mick, the 30-year-old villain, stand under the basket after... What ref is letting that happen?
And
just standing
in,
there?
In sweat. What did they do? Pour a bucket of water on his head?
End of the game, WD.
Yeah, but he kept dripping.
Yeah, it took a while for them to get into their set there at the end, too, I venture to say. Even the driveway basketball scene with Boof and his dad, Scott's dad.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad. That doesn't make sense. Like, under what circumstance is the dad playing pickup hoops or driveway hoops with the son's girlfriend or friend that's a girl? Not a normal situation at all. Really explained either.
Actually, don't they like go way back? Didn't they meet when they were like kids?
Yeah.
So there you go. They probably know each other very well.
Still kind of strange.
By the way, was the coach eating deviled eggs on the sideline? What was happening there?
That leads us, again, a great transition to best quote. Because my five, maybe six favorite quotes from this movie belong to Coach Finstock.
See, I just jotted down the first one that really had me laughing.
Was it Coach Finstock?
No, it was the theater instructor.
What'd he say?
More central, darling. We need to feel you. Want to smell me. Hurt me, hurt me.
Yeah.
Want Here to we smell go. You.
Here we go. There are three rules that I live by.
Oh, yeah, this one.
Never get less than 12 hours sleep. Never play cards with a guy who has the same first name as a city. And never get involved with a woman with a tattoo of a dagger on her body. You stick with that, everything else is cream cheese.
Not.
That's good. What happened to the kid? I don't know. He quit. He was a third stringer. I didn't need him. He's like, I need your help. What is it? Gambling? Drugs? You know, I'd really like to help you, but I'm kind of tapped out this month. The IRS is coming down on me. It's some sort of personal vendetta against Bobby Finstock. And then the capper. It doesn't matter how you play the game. It's whether you win or lose. And even that doesn't matter. Or even that doesn't make all the difference.
He was great.
Rotten Tomatoes score. Can you get within 5? My guess, no.
87.
52.
Eek.
One of the lowest that we've ever had.
Jeez.
That's been At the Movies with the WD.
It's rough.
Now that college basketball season's over, the NBA is about to take center stage, and WD, the Charlotte Hornets, are in the news. Final home game of the year for Charlotte. It's against Dallas. And that means it's Steve Clifford's final home game as the head coach of the Hornets. I wonder if they'll have a send-off of some sorts for him since he is the all-time winningest coach in Hornets history. As for who's going to be his replacement, Adrian Wojnarowski, Woj, just put out a tweet. They are interviewing Clipper assistant Jay Larrañaga, son of Miami Hurricanes coach Jim Larrañaga. Jim Phillips, your thoughts on that news?
Have a great day and go ACC.
Then you got a pretty good NBA doubleheader on TNT tonight. You have the Celtics at the Bucks. Don't know who the second best team in the East is. It might be Milwaukee, who's... I mean, Boston's like 15 games ahead of everybody in the Eastern Conference, but I think Milwaukee is second, and thus this could be an Eastern Conference Finals preview, and it's in Milwaukee. I want to see what Milwaukee has for the Celtics. And then in the nightcap, probably most noteworthy, 10 o'clock tonight, you got the Golden State Warriors playing at the LA Lakers. This seems like a must-win game for Golden State if they want to get out of that number 10 hole. If the Lakers win tonight, Golden State is pretty much set at that 10 spot, with the Lakers having a chance to play out of the 9-10 elimination play-in game and getting to the 8 spot. That's where we're at with just about three or four games to go here. The Lakers are a game and a half ahead of Golden State. If Golden State loses, they're going to be in that 10 spot. And the way it works, if you're unfamiliar, 9-10, play in an elimination game. The winner of that game gets the loser of the 7-8 play-in game. 7th seed and the 8th seed. And then that becomes an elimination game. The winner of that game gets the 8th spot. That's how this works.
By the way, did you see who Scott Fowler said that the Charlotte Hornets should give a call to?
Dawn Staley.
Dawn Staley, Charlotte Sting legend.
Good Charlotte Sting callback. We'll get Charlotte Sting super fan Darren Gant's thoughts on that when he joins us later in the show.
Let's go, baby.
What, kind of like this?
Let's go! Go!
The Drive with Josh Graham.
What's better than one Orioles fan on the show? Two Oriole fans on the show. Connor O'Neill in studio with us. Deacon Illustrated, Devils Illustrated. We'll talk Deacons later. The big news of the day comes from Duke. Mark Mitchell, right before we got on the air, enters the transfer portal. Brendan Marks is our guy, and he said yesterday, John Shire probably had to prepare for some difficult conversations to be had. I'm interested if this news is the result of one of those difficult conversations or him looking at Malawak and Cooper Flagg, both front court players, coming in next year who are projected top five draft picks and realizing that it's going to be pretty congested there and already being resigned to the fact that one way or another, whether it's the NBA or the transfer portal, this was going to be it for him at Duke.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both of those. I really think some of the difficult conversations probably started back in December and January. If you remember all the way back, Mark Mitchell played in 68 games at Duke. He started 67 of them. The one game he didn't start was their loss at Georgia Tech, and he was benched with the broadcast team saying going into that game, John Shire was trying to send a message to him to be tougher. And he has 10 points and has the dunk that puts Duke up 4 in that game. But after the dunk that puts Duke up 4 gets called for a tech, Georgia Tech has a 4-point possession. Duke never led for the rest of the game and loses, yada, yada, yada. It was a weird year for him. And I say that, look, he played out of position. Like, he was a 3 last year. He was a 4 this year. It's part of the bigger conversation of this team did not bring in a transfer big. So Kyle Filipowski had to play out of position. Mark Mitchell had to play out of position. They played a 3-guard lineup for most of the season, if not all of it, really. And you're looking at this, and it's just kind of the way college basketball has moved so fast in the last 4 to 5 years, where you're looking at these guys and it's like, well, he's a really talented player. He was really productive. Like, I've got the Mark Mitchell double digit tracker is now retired at 33-4.
When he reaches double digits.
When he scored 10 or more. And it was 14-1 when he scored at least 15. 19-12 when he played and scored in single digit. Like, that's the side of the fact that people don't realize, I don't think, because it's not the one that I tout so much, but they're kind of a above average team when he scored in single figures and when he was ineffective. And but where we are in college basketball is just you looking at a guy like that, you're looking at what Duke is bringing in, you're looking at the way Duke wants to play based on what you think of the personnel they have coming in, like Isaiah Evans, Cooper Flagg, Con Newpel, Darren Harris. They're all shooters, right? Like, Cooper Flagg might be the worst shooter of anybody coming in next year. Other than the two big men with Malawak and Patrick Gongba. So, you know, Mark Mitchell, I love the kid, but he's not a shooter.
This is a perfect segue to the other big question that many have, and that's what's going to happen with Jeremy Roach, because We saw Hubert Davis have a difficult conversation a year ago with a guy who hit an iconic shot, who was beloved by many because of that, and was the leading scorer of the team for a team that underachieved. He moved on. It was best for Caleb Love. Now, I don't want to equate Caleb Love to Jeremy Roach here, but when you are projected to be the best team in college basketball going into next year, and all the way too soon rankings have Duke at the very top at the moment, can you do better at point guard than Jeremy Roach through the portal?
Can we revisit after this? Can we revisit how stupid the way too early rankings are?
Yeah.
Like, they were stupid before. Now, when you've got like 800 talented players in the portal without destinations,
it's even dumber.
It's the dumbest thing we do.
It's really, really dumb. But with Jeremy Roach, is John Shire, who brought in zero transfers this past season, looking at it as, if I want to take this team to the next level, can I do better with my two guard or point guard in that spot than he is? If we're assuming Caleb Love or Caleb Foster is to return as a shooting guard.
Yeah, I think Caleb Foster is returning. And I think Caleb Foster is a point guard. I think Duke either gets one of two back between Jeremy Roach and Tyrese Proctor.
You think there's a chance Proctor's back?
Yes.
Wow. Yes.
I honestly would put more money on Proctor coming back than Roach at this point. I have thought Jeremy Roach was going to be gone after his sophomore year when the lane was there for it to be a clean break from Coach K to Shire. Then I thought last year, going through learning an entire new freshman class again, the ups and downs of his season last year, I thought it was going to be it.
Here's what makes me incredulous about it. I don't think Jeremy Roach gets drafted this year in a bad draft. So I don't know where he goes, and you have the chance to play on a really good team like he does. When I talk to NBA scouts about guys on this Duke team, there are some who think that Tyrese Proctor is the best prospect on the team, even more than McCain or Filipowski. And I think, especially in this year's draft, you're probably going to be a first-round draft pick if you're Tyrese Proctor.
Yeah, I don't see that. I think his offensive game is too raw. He did not show enough consistency, going 0-for-9 when it mattered the most in the Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to get past that. Game against Carolina, he had an 0-for.
Yeah, let's start with assumptions then, because that would have been a wrong assumption that Tyrese Proctor is gone in your mind. Kyle Filipowski's gone.
Yes.
Jared McCain's gone.
Like 98% sure he will enter, and then, you know,
one of those, is he going to, like Trevor Keels?
If he gets poor feedback, then you hold a spot open for him.
It could be like Trevor Keels, perhaps, where
yeah, maybe.
You just don't know until the last moment. Caleb Foster, back.
I think he's back.
Okay. Roach, question mark. Tyrese Proctor, question mark. How active is John Shire going to be in the meantime? How active can he be with roster spots in the portal this year?
Yeah, I think they're certainly going to be more active than they were last year. And I know that the immediate answer to that is, well, it's hard to be more active
when you don't bring in a transfer.
Right. They were active last year. They just didn't get one. I think they have more spots to play with.
Christian
Reeves is gone. Mark Mitchell's gone. The scholarships come off the books with Spencer Hubbard and Ryan Young.
Filipowski leaving.
You think Jared McCain is leaving. I think one of the two between Roach and Proctor. So you start looking at it as, you know, this is kind of new information for me, but I think you might be looking at Cooper Flagg play the three next year instead of playing the four, which is why you see Duke looking at possible forward center types, like the Drexel kid. I think his name is Amari Williams, mm-hmm. who entered the portal yesterday. I think you'll see them bring in another big man, and I don't know if they would say no to a guard. I mean, you can't help but look at what UConn did with experienced grown men guards, and look at what they did to Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer last night.
Connor O'Neill, he's in studio with us. Deacon Illustrated, Devils Illustrated. The Orioles just hit a sack fly They're up 4-1 on the Red Sox right now. Going to spoil their home opener just like they spoiled the home opener for two other teams in the past week. In addition to their own home opener, they've now been a part of three other teams' home openers. Can't say I've ever seen that.
Who needs championships when you can look at Burns?
That's what we're about here in the studio.
Like, I need Corbin Burns to get two more strikeouts here.
I think he has one more inning in him, so we'll keep an eye on that as well. I decided to do one of those dumb three-leg parlays where tied up after the first, fewer than 3.5 runs, and the Orioles win. Looks like we're going to get the under 3.5 here on runs, and the Orioles are in good position, but one bad pitch, and the Red Sox have one of their two hits, a home run with two outs in the first. Not great. We need to figure out a movie for WD next week. So, UConn won its sixth national championship. Back-to-back. Won their fifth last year, their sixth this year. So, removing movies that came out in 23 and 24, I decided to look at some movies that have come out in 1999, 2004, 2011, and 2014.
More Connor, of a thinking man's picture.
Shout out to Iron Eagle. So these are the movies that I've picked out. I've got like four or five from each year. Connor, you just tell me which of these you like, okay, if you've seen any of these or heard anything about these. 99, Notting Hill, American Pie, Eyes Wide Shut. That would be an interesting show. Talented Mr. Ripley.
I would go one of the first two, and I would lean, what's the second one?
American Pie.
I would lean American Pie. That's a classic.
Okay, American Pie. We'll put that on the list here.
All of these are already approved WD has not seen yet?
Well, that's a great question. I just assumed he hadn't seen any of these movies. Have you seen Notting Hill? American Pie? Eyes Wide Shut?
There we go.
Talented Mr. Ripley? I just assumed he hadn't seen these movies. Like, I've gotten pretty good at picking movies that I think WD has not seen. Okay, 2004, The Notebook. Have you seen that, WD?
I have.
Oh.
Good, because I haven't.
Scratch that one off.
I have seen that.
Kill Bill. 13 Going on 30. Anchorman.
We did that one.
Oh, that was the first one we ever did.
That's right.
Along Came Polly.
What is that?
I guess I default to Along Came Polly.
Kill Bill?
Out of the three. I am a pretty big Tarantino fan. I actually watched Once a Time in Hollywood on the way back from Dallas.
I watched that last night. Part of me wants to just do Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but
the plane cut off with 15 minutes left, so I wound up having to like look up how the rest of the movie goes instead of like pulling up Hulu and fast forwarding 2 hours.
Did you at least get the action sequence? I forget the last 15 minutes. Yeah. Okay.
I got enough.
So you want Along Came Polly out of those?
I want Along Came Polly.
All right, there we go. 2011. Have you seen Bridesmaids?
No, we haven't done Bridesmaids.
Fast Five. Midnight in Paris. Tangled.
I've heard about that one, though.
Dude, I swear, I have been in here, not in this seat, because this is the first time I've been in this seat. I have been in here and voted for WD to do Bridesmaids.
All right, there it is. Bridesmaids is going to be the third one. We're going all comedies here, and I love it.
Yeah.
2014, Gone Girl.
That's
a shocker. How have we not done that? Neighbors. That's a good one. Comedy, Zac Efron, Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne from Bridesmaids.
We're two for two, and I would vote for either one of these so far.
Frozen.
I don't really know Frozen.
I've had no desire to watch that.
Let It Go!
Yeah.
Have we made you watch John Wick?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we need one of the ones out of Gone Girl, Neighbors, and Frozen.
Well, I guess if you're sticking with the comedies, you got to...
Go Neighbors.
You got to go Neighbors.
All right, there you go. So we're going comedies. American Pie, Bridesmaids, Along Came Polly, Neighbors. Those are all movies that came out in years that UConn has won the national championship. That'll be up at the poll shortly.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
We've kind of let the off-season shake out a bit in between visits with our friend Darren Gant from Panthers.com. So there is a lot for us to cover. And one of the things I like about you, Darren, is you're not one of those guys that just goes along with the crowd, with popular opinion, if you don't feel convicted in what the crowd is saying. And I remember you were pretty strongly endorsing Ike Ekwonu, saying that he still could be a really good left tackle, even as things weren't going great and people were discussing the possibility of him being a guard going into his third season. Now we see the Panthers invest $150 million combined in contracts for a couple of guards from Seattle and Miami. And you have, obviously, Austin Corbett, who's capable of playing center, Brady Christensen coming back as well. How good do you think this offensive line can be now that we kind of know who the parts are?
Well, for starters, I appreciate you acknowledging me as a person who's willing to go against the grain and take an unpopular opinion, coming from a man wearing a Virginia basketball shirt.
Hey, I married into this, and
okay. And I'm not trying to cause problems at home, but that's a hate crime against basketball that they commit every time they step on the floor.
Purdue kind of does that. They kind of do that too.
But Purdue is the joy killer of basketball. America wanted to see more DJ Burns, and they prevented it by just stultifying the game of basketball to a point that it became unwatchable. Even with the benefit of malt beverage, of which I enjoyed a couple with some friends while trying to watch a game and enjoy it. But the Purdue's and Virginia's of the world conspire against me. At any rate, where were we?
O-line.
DJ Burns O-line. No, not DJ Burns O-line. Ike Ekwonu O-line. I think the group can be pretty good. And just watching those guys, I mean, they're not out on the field doing football stuff yet. They're just in the weight room and running some conditioning and stuff like that in off-season workouts right now. But my God, when you see the sheer size of Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis, we got a preview on the eclipse yesterday when he walked in front of the sun. All right? I mean, these guys are – they paid $150 million for 650 pounds a guard, and they did it for a reason, because they needed to shore things up from the inside out. I believe that Austin's going to be a pretty good center. Austin Corbett, for being a polite, well-mannered, kind Mormon young gentleman, amazing husband and father, is one of the nastier football players you're ever going to want to run into. He does that clean Mormon trash talk where he doesn't swear, but he gets on everybody's nerves. And then Taylor Moten, all he's done is not missed a snap in 6 years. And I remember the Ike Ekwonu that went 10 games without giving up a sack as a rookie. So I think there's an opportunity for it to be pretty good. It's just going to be a job for Joe Gilbert, Harold Goodwin, and a new coaching staff to kind of get in there and adjust some things. But I think for that offensive line, as with many things Carolina Panthers, I think this applies to, you know, Jonathan Mingo's development in a second year. I think it applies to Bryce Young in a big way. I think the biggest thing is going to be creating a functional condition for offense. And that was not present last year. And if they can create one of those this year, then I think a lot of those individual parts are going to be the boats that rise with the tide.
I had a chance to run into Bill Polian at a basketball game about a month ago, and we were talking about a quote that he gave you last year for a story related to Bryce Young, where he said the biggest leap he's going to take is from year one to year two, and it's something as simple as having the full off season. And that made a lot of sense to me when you consider that Bryce Young was not a Carolina Panther until the last day of April last year. He didn't share a field with any of his teammates, and it was just rookies until May the 22nd. You're not doing the football stuff, as you mentioned, but it's April the 9th, and he's in a building, and he knows who his coach is, and he's known who his coach is since the last week of January. I have to think a lot of the advantages, which might set up a better condition for quarterbacking this year, is as simple as everything's not going to be rushed. He has a playbook. He has an understanding of what this league is about in a way that he didn't a year ago, and he's able to participate in the full offseason in a way that you can't as a rookie.
Yeah, and I think things as simple as, if you noticed our offseason workout galleries on Panthers.com, having Bryce in the middle of a huddle of offensive players, even though they're not breaking to run Spider X 2Y banana, they're breaking to go run sprints, means something. And I think having those boots on the ground, I mean, if you see those pictures, you notice that Icky and Corbett and Hunt and Lewis and Moten and Deontay Johnson and Adam Thielen and Mingo and Chuba and Miles are all there. So I just think that has a big impact for Bryce being able to settle in, as you say, get his feet underneath him and get comfortable in a way that you know, allows him to take that step forward. I mean, they're not finished on offense. I think I'm like everybody else in the world. When you're looking at a draft and you see 33, 39, 65, you're expecting one of those to be a pass catcher, whether it's some tight end, whether it's some wide receiver from a deep group. I think we all anticipate some of those additions coming up here in a couple of weeks. But I think for the most part, that we're, like you said, that work Bryce is doing right now on the ground, just getting to know Deontay Johnson. And let me tell you, the biggest thing they've got going for them offensively, Deontay Johnson's in a contract year, friends, and he is supremely motivated to reestablish himself with what he believes is a pretty good quarterback, which wasn't always the case for him in Pittsburgh.
Darren Gantz with us here. I want to ask a broad football question that is related to the Panthers. What positions do you view as being the most difficult to replace? And I ask that in the context of the Panthers traded away Brian Burns, and they've now added Jadeveon Clowney and DJ Wonnum there. And they've re-signed and extended Derrick Brown. You don't see a lot of people at his position becoming available either. So if you're putting together the list of positions that are difficult to replace in an offseason, what's at the top of the list? How's that look?
Well, I mean, you know, quarterback's obviously at the top of the list for everybody. That's why a couple of those cats like J.J. McCarthy and, you know, others might get way overdrafted in a couple of weeks.
But Everybody's hold one second. Let me add a distinction, though. I think there are so many. It's hard to find an elite quarterback, sure, but to find serviceable level quarterback play, is that easier or harder than finding serviceable, you know, defensive tackle or edge?
When I think about questions like this, I look to see what guys are getting paid in free agency. And if you look at the most expensive positions, I mean, other than quarterback, it's pass rusher, it's left tackle, it's cornerback, it's wide receiver. Yeah. I mean, those are the spots. And, you know, for good or for ill, the Panthers have young guys at a couple of those positions where it's like, okay, they're enjoying those rookie contracts at left tackle, at cornerback, at quarterback. Obviously, pass rusher is going to be something. I think pass rusher and corner are pretty high on that draft list, too. It can't be all wide receivers here at the end of the month. I think they're going to have to address both of those areas if they can. And I just think it's tough because everybody's scheme is a little different. I think that they believe the difference in Brian Burns and Jadeveon Clowney is going to show up not just in pass rush, but in run defense. And when you look at bringing in an A'shaun Robinson, who you'll be able to read more about soon on Panthers.com. Hey, how's that for a tease?
Pretty good.
I think adding a guy like Clowney was essential because if they don't sign Jadeveon Clowney, then they're going into that draft shopping hungry, as Dave Gettleman says, and having to draft two or three of them just to be able to field a team. But they not only found one, but they found a pretty good one. Hang on, let me throw something at this dog that's making noise in the background.
Oh, sorry about that. What kind of dog do you have?
My wife has French bulldogs, Josh. I'm so glad you asked. They're delightful creatures. Can I interest you in one or two?
Do we still have the picture queued up of Willow the dog being scared by the Easter bunny in the past week, so you could see what type of pup I'm rocking with? There's Willow the dog being terrified by the Easter bunny.
Yeah, I've got a couple of French bulldogs in this house that like to hang out in the garden, which is not great all the time because they're not trying to pull weeds or anything.
Darren Gant, let's get to your favorite topic, music. I never have been to the first night of Merlefest. Never have been. Why? Because it's always the first night of the draft. This year, Panthers do not have a first-round pick. And I've been texting the people I know in that building, what likelihood do you move into round one? And all of them have given me the same answer, pretty darn low. We're not probably going to give up draft picks. So they're probably not picking in round one, which means I'm going to Merlefest. WD doesn't know this yet. He's probably going to be hosting my show here, our show.
If you don't know, now you know.
There you go. On that Thursday night. And I'm going to go see Steep Canyon Rangers and Old Crow Medicine Show with my mom and grandmother. That's my plan.
That's going to be great. A, because you get to hang out with your family, and that's time you got to value wherever and whenever you get it. I mean, you and grandma at Old Crow, that's a party I would like to be a part of. I got a feeling, though, even if they don't trade into the first round, that night is going to be a night I need to be at the office, because there's going to be stuff happening from about 10 p.m. Thursday to about 6 p.m. Friday that your loyal reporter here is going to want to witness and be able to document for all the fans later on. So I feel a certain journalistic obligation to be on the ground, whether they're drafting that night or not. But I absolutely encourage you to enjoy that without shame.
I feel no shame.
You should not.
I'm going to see Old Crow. I'm going to see Steep Canyon Rangers.
Two of my favorite things. You're going to see the show, and you're going to hang out with Grandma and Mom. How bad is it all, really?
Bang, bang, pow, pow. Tell me about the next show you're excited to see.
I've got a lot of concerts.
I want to hear about it.
All of a sudden. I'm going to go see Hayes Carl here in a couple of weeks at Neighborhood Theater. I am going to the Love and Life Music Festival. That Noah Kahn fellow that's very popular among the young people is going to be there, along with this little startup band called the Avett Brothers, Stevie Nicks. You know, it's a pretty cool little festival here coming to town. Maggie Rogers, a bunch of people I want to see are going to be there.
Have we talked about this? When is this show that the Avetts are going to be at?
Weekend after the draft, first weekend in May. It's same weekend as Shaky Knees in Atlanta, so there's a lot of cross-pollination between the two festivals. But here is the here's the real sleeper that just crossed my screen this morning.
Mm.
Cake is coming to Charlotte in August.
Cake!
And unless I'm off at some joint practice somewhere during training camp, I'm going to go see Cake.
Even if you are at a joint practice. Wait, are we in Spartanburg again this year?
No, we're in Charlotte
okay.
this year.
Okay, just What's making sure. I just got to make sure. So there's no excuse. There's no excuse for you to not see Cake.
Well, like I said, unless circumstances send me to another city somehow.
Oh, and Inter Squad.
I am looking forward to seeing Cake.
Yeah, see, Inter Squad, there's no doubt. WD, do you know about Cake?
Not a clue.
This, you know, it's disappointing, which I think is a good segue to the thing we'll close with here.
Yeah, you should. That should be the bumper music coming out of this. Short Skirt and a Long Jacket was the theme music for a very underrated television show, Chuck, back in the 2000s.
Yes, Chuck.
Big Chuck fan.
Wow. Okay, so this might make you nostalgic too. WD has seen none of the good movies.
Yeah,
so he watched Teen Wolf last night, which was great. He got to learn about Coach Finstock, some of the advice that he had. these are some movies he hasn't seen as well. All from years that UConn won a national championship in the last 25 years, other than the last two. American Pie, 99. Along Came Polly, 2004. Bridesmaids, 2011. Neighbors, 2014. Which of those four should WD watch first?
Ooh, that's a tough call. I mean, I think in things like this, you almost start old and work your way up new.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen American Pie, I think that's probably the beginning point on that list.
Okay. And right now, 63% of the poll says American Pie.
That's
so I think your movie next week, WD, is going to be American Pie, courtesy of Darren Gant.
And I'm just assuming he hasn't seen Blazing Saddles.
We did do Blazing
Cotton,
Saddles.
Voice of the Deeks, helped us help WD with that suggestion there.
All right. Where is Fletch on this list? That's the real homework.
See, Fletch is an 80s comedy that WD for sure has not seen.
Who else recommended this?
Iron Eagle is a huge... Here's what you should know about Iron Eagle. We love listening to him on the Final Four for the first time last night. Every time he sees me or Will Dalton, the question is, what movie have you seen? To the point where we have a drop where Iron Eagle's talking about Thinking Man Pictures.
WD needs more of a Thinking Man's picture.
And he usually will suggest Beverly Hills Cop or Fletch or Caddyshack or Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's usually an 80s comedy.
Yeah, can I borrow your towel? My car just hit a water buffalo.
I'll let him go out on the high like that. Derek Ant, it's good to see you, and I hope to see you again sometime soon. Thanks for doing this.
Hopefully soon, but not to Thursday night of the draft. You got better plans.
That's right, I do. Grandma.